Fabulous Radio listeners, and welcome to yet another episode of Sex Talk. I'm your host, DJ 11. And tonight we have a very special Memorial Day show lined up for you. Those of you who are regular listeners will remember our trusty co-host, Lance, who always provided his own unique brand of
heteronormative humor.
Precisely. Well, finally, after years of both political and legal pressure, got rid of Lance. Lance is gone for the summer, and now the show can return to really what it was meant to be. I mean, since Lance arrived, we had all these shows on, homosexuality and sexual perversions and so on, and it really kind of brought the show down into the gutter. And now that Lance has moved on, I feel the show can return to its intellectual roots.
Yes, become the safe Midwestern show it was always intended to be.
Precisely. And so tonight I have three very very special guests and co-hosts. The line between guest and co-host is so fuzzy. I've already forgotten all of your names.
I'm DJ Zoetrope.
DJ Zoetrope.
No, I'm Dr. Sexopolis.
Dr. Sexopolis and DJ Sensitivity.
DJ Sensitivity, yes.
So, Dr. Sexopolis, you got your degree here at Carnegie Mellon in part of a new doctor in
sexological studies.
Hello.
Sorry, that's the sheer power of the intellectual force of my sexological degree. Manifesting itself in feedback.
I wonder if our producer knows that our speakers are way too loud in here. So we're having a few minor technical difficulties, but I want our listeners to turn their brains on to 150% because tonight's going to be stimulating, sexually exciting, and it's going to be a breakthrough on many, many dimensions. So the question I have for our panel of sex experts here is,
what's the theme for tonight's show, DJ 11 Inches? Oh, sorry, DJ 11.
Did I not mention that? I was admiring my own wardrobe. Is this working for you? I
mean, actually, it is. It's better than the two denims you had on several months ago.
I wish someone would explain
gray is always a safe color.
Yes. Yeah, and it shows off your ripped abs nicely.
I wanted to ask you something. I mean, you're both art experts, and I think
Okay.
I think you can speak to this issue a little bit. So there tonight, I was at
the. You might want to announce the theme for the show. Actually, did you
my show? Oh, not
sorry.
Your show.
Sorry,
your show.
You're
you
pushing
can announce
it, Dr. Sexopolis.
Your doctorate is revoked.
Sorry, you're professor emeritus of sexology. I forget my place.
So there I was. So I was working out in the locker room tonight, and I carefully
in the locker room.
Well, I
you must have a different idea of working out than me. I don't know what you do with your workout. Is it the 2-minute workout?
Working out my frustrations. When I walked to the locker room, there were these two people playing racquetball, and there was this one hottie, and he was playing with his little friend, and his little friend was kind of ugly. So I just noted them, and I sort of studied them playing racquetball for a while. It wasn't really ugly, but
most men's little friends are kind of ugly.
I mean, ugly is kind of harsh. I mean, few people are truly ugly.
Let's just say less attractive.
Less attractive. One was a 10, and one was like a 0.004. Right.
Wow. That's a lot of precision.
I noted them, and I went into the locker room, and I did my thing, and then I took my shower, and I came out, and then they came in, and I noticed they came in with towels, and I thought, because I'm so clever, I thought, maybe they were about to take a shower, and so I quickly stripped off all my clothes and took a second shower.
You didn't.
In case you're ever wondering whether anybody does this, they do. I mean, I do. I mean,
and yeah, hypothetically, and you would know.
And so, I went in there, I was soaping up and kind of doing my bathing thing, but I'll give you a guess, the two of you, since you're both educated in the field of art. Of the two, of the hottie and the, naughty, if I were to say one of them got in and got all naked and, took a big, robust shower right next to me, and the other one just, meekly and,
timidly
stayed dressed and just got dressed without going to the shower, which would you think?
Well, considering the tragic comic story, which is your life, I'd say it was Mr. Troll who stripped
exactly
down and soaked his hairy butt up in front of you.
Exactly. And then he asked me to, wash his hairy back.
Seriously?
No, work with me here.
Okay. Oh, yes, of course.
And it grossed me out.
And so you got to work
but you did it willingly
his,
because you thought you probably thought he probably doesn't have that many people that watch his back.
Actually, this happened to me. Actually, this really did happen when I was at the Jewish Community Center here in Squirrel Hill, fabulous, fabulous place. And some like old
Renewed
guy
pickup spot.
Yeah, well, not it didn't not so much for me. Although, there was another tragic story involving this like Hati, who I met in the steam room at the Jewish Community Center. But nothing ever. I mean. Anyway, that's another story. That's another story for when we're not talking about art. But this very old gentleman, like, got in the shower next to me, and then he asked me to actually wash his back. I'm like, excuse me, did I hear you right? You actually want me to soap up your back? And he's like, yes, please. And so I did. It was horrible. But, you know,
did anything come of it?
Different century, different
was he
this
getting,
guy's like 75 years old. I mean,
was he getting, did you notice he was getting some kind of pleasure from this? Yeah, or?
I think with his people and his culture or whatever, that was like, in the 1900s when there were like public baths everywhere, I think that was just the thing to do.
However, one could make the same argument erroneously about, say, Arthur C. Clarke. And woe be to all the Sri Lankan youths who have made that error. Or say William S. Burroughs, right?
Are you saying when Arthur C. Clarke asks you for a banana?
Or to soap his back, be aware.
I think, you know, Arthur C. Clarke has denied that he's ever had any untoward relationships with Sri Lankan boys. Just to be, you know.
He has, as far as I recall, he has actually said that he's gay.
Really?
Yeah. But
really?
He's denied vociferously that he's had any contact with illegally young men. But I think it's at least open. Although a caller could, of course, correct us. My knowledge of Arthur C. Clarke's sexuality is founded more on innuendo and humorous rumor than...
If someone wants to do a web search on my new favorite website, which is raging.com, and find out whether Arthur C. Clarke is gay or not, please call in. The numbers are 621-9728 and 268-9728. You know, and while I was soaping up this old man's back and this troll's back tonight... Like, how was it, like, do young, hot men sense that it's dangerous for them to take a shower because someone like me might be watching them? Or are they just shy, sort of, by nature?
I think men in general, I mean, I don't know, I only know from my hetero men friends, but they seem to say that they do not look at each other.
Absolutely not.
And they're very careful about... how they carry themselves in this
environment.
Because
Hottie could, of course, be deeply closeted, right? That kind of shyness in the locker room is stereotypical, but I think it's a classic sign
it's
of
a
some...
big flashing red light. Yeah. So your friends, DJ Zootropolis, they certainly don't look at other guys, but do they actually avoid the shower because they don't want to be looked at?
I've known some people that did, yeah.
Wow.
I didn't shower in high school gym.
Were they hotties?
I don't know.
I certainly didn't shower in high school gym because I was kind of afraid of the teasing and the...
Well, you have a tragically malformed penis.
True. Although the extra finger is prehensile, can be used to pick objects up and zip my fly from the inside. So there are advantages.
Where's our producer? This thing is still annoying me. Is she, like, gone?
She was asleep.
She's making... It's bugging
feedbacky.
It's
anyway.
So.
But then again, like just to bring this back to art, right? If one has ever seen Michelangelo's David, you might have been tragically, sadly disappointed had the hottie actually soaped up nude next to you.
Well,
Michelangelo's David, you know.
I mean, people.
3 inches.
Tops. But the Greeks,
but I hear that's
like
average.
He might be a grower rather than a shower, as I said. I don't, you know, if I had a chance to have sex with Michelangelo's, like the living form of Michelangelo's David, I'd go that way. I mean, he's fine.
Huge hands and feet, and yet such a small little.
It's, you know,
Pinga, exactly.
I think that our expectations are tainted. But I mean, I have a small penis. Let's face it. I think my expectations are tainted by, you know, the media's representation of the penis.
Huh?
Oh, I was trying to prompt DJ Zoe Trope to into a story about a Brazilian friend of hers, Maru.
Oh, yeah. I just thought this was really strange. When I was in Brazil last year a couple times for some art exhibits, I was hanging out with a very fun, very dear friend of mine. Gay Brazilian guy in Rio.
I'm liking this. Okay.
And
I've seen pictures. Quite a few too.
You know, in Rio, the topic all the time in any conversation is sex. Yeah, you would love it. It's the, you know, it's the it's take San Francisco with all of its certain population, and then give it total island, relaxed, crazy, open, you know, kind of attitude.
Holy cow.
And you get Rio. At least this was my impression because everybody I met was wearing hardly any clothes and was just sexual.
You're killing me here. So you're saying that when I applied to graduate school and I had a choice between going to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania or Rio de Janeiro, I should have checked box B.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Or if they have an exchange program, if you can apply, I don't know.
Wow.
But anyway, we were having conversations about sex. I was asking him about gay sex in Rio and he was asking me stuff and he said that he seriously asked me if all American men's penises were really big because he hadn't slept with an American man yet.
Mm.
And he got this idea from porn. And I said, Mauro, think about where you're getting your image from. And it was just – but it was interesting to me for a guy that's pretty
worldly-wise.
Worldly to ask me this question.
Again, we talked about Germany before. When I was in Germany, I mean, there were sort of semi-stupid, but not completely stupid people who thought that we all always wore holsters and, you know, six-shooters and, you know, lived on the range, right? I mean, they were probably stupider than your friend. What was his name? Jorge?
Mauro.
Ooh.
He's Italian.
You have pictures of him that I can like?
He's very cute.
Yeah, I've seen pictures. He is.
He's fine. He's a fine gay boy.
See, Brazil has this nice combination of all these kind of cultures and groups of people from all around the world coming together, and so you get this like delightful interracial melange of everybody. You get, you know, the Italians and the Japanese and, you know, lots of Caribbeans.
It's like Star Trek with sex.
Right. So, not everybody has that weird forehead,
so
though.
It's so sex-filled, that place. Well, especially Rio. More than, like, other cities. But anyway.
How does this? How do these things develop? And, like, why isn't Pittsburgh, like, the Rio of the Midwest?
Cloud cover, I think. I mean, just the same. Seattle is undoubtedly, you know, hipper than Pittsburgh. But when you think Seattle, you do not think, you know, hot, raw sex.
Mm.
You think
Bill Gates.
Bill Gates in angry bands.
Kind of pinched, greedy little men.
Exactly.
So,
where's Miami, right?
Well, I don't know. I think
hot naked butts.
Drugs and corruption. Well, hot naked butts. So, like, if I went there, I mean, do you have to, like, be really fit and attractive to go there and have sex? Or do they have sex with any – I mean, like, would I be considered – I mean, even though I'm sort of a wreck and out of shape and old, is it because I'm an exotic American, they would all have sex with me because I'm so fascinating?
Well, yeah, you get points for being American. They'd like that.
Points.
Yeah, you'll get big bonus points.
Okay.
What?
No, a friend of mine recently spent some time in Iceland, actually on business, and she was there with her coworker, who's this short, pudgy, trollish kind of nerd, and the women in Iceland were all over him like ugly on an ape. Because he was so exotic. He was like a Jewish American who they'd never met. Because basically Iceland, everyone in Iceland is related to each other. It's this huge, inbred, very, very isolationist society. And so he was, you know, Mr. Exotic as nebbishy Jewish guy from New York City. So I'm thinking, if you don't mind slightly colder temperatures, although they do have hot springs you could lounge in, maybe Iceland would be your best bet. Because that way you get a lot of points for being exotic.
But the question is, do I look Icelandic?
No, they all are tall and blonde.
Interesting. Wow. So, but see, that isn't. I mean, that's. I mean, we don't have that in our culture. Like, I mean,
yes, we do.
We do, but it's not like it's. I mean, different isn't enough. Like, if you're different and grotesquely deformed, I mean,
right.
But that could work for you in different subcultures.
Yeah.
And tattooed.
But as a female friend of mine once said, every woman goes through a period of being the United Nations, like wanting to date foreign men. And I think just being a French guy gets you a lot of points here in the U.S.
How is that with American women? The United Nations? The United Nations doesn't date men, or does it?
Some of them, I'm sure, do. And so I think you can definitely cash in a fair amount of exotica points.
And you could do a world tour of the show, and then you'll have the radio host points to add.
True, absolutely.
The American point.
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you another thing. Here, we'll bring this back. Well, we'll put the Brazil and the sex together.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't brought it back to art yet, but we'll work on that. Why not? When I was there, I didn't speak Portuguese.
Mm.
I could understand things basically from context. So I was at Mauro's house, and I'm watching TV while he's taking a shower or whatever. And there's all these...
He's taking a shower in his, like, little, you know, bamboo hut or whatever. Like,
he had an apartment.
And she's watching the coconut TV.
Sponging him. Like, why are you not, like, in there?
Because he likes boys.
But you like boys. I mean,
it's true. We were like brother and sister.
It's so annoying. People just don't share. People who are beautiful should be obligated to, like, shower, you know, in front, shower sort of very seductively.
Anyway, people. I was saying...
Every, you know, each according to his means.
The Brazilian TV, I mean, besides getting the worst, like, B-level, C-level movies that don't ever make it on any network here except for maybe at 4 in the morning on whatever.
Don't underestimate the WB.
They are like, every time I turn on the TV, I should have just called it sex TV. There would be people, these 17, 18-year-old couples talking about their sex life. In front of the audience, like, wow. The problems they're having with it, and then a big crowd of people, and they're discussing, five different couples discussing their sex life. Then another show, this was my favorite because it took me a few minutes to figure out what the hell was going on. But you know, it's Rio, it's Brazil, it's a game show, it's got to be include sex, right?
Just a clarification, you understand Portuguese at this point? Or you
don't? No, I'm sort of just figuring out by gestures and what the hell's, what I can... get from the picture and how everybody's laughing or clapping or whatever.
So they might have been talking about, like, electronics, but just because you don't understand Portuguese, you assume they were talking about sex.
Well, this is how I understood this game show.
Okay.
Basically, a sort of, you know how there's always the star and then the regular person, right?
Mm-hmm.
On, like, say, Hollywood Squares or whatever. So the star, there was both a male star and a female star. Mm-hmm. What were hooked up to a heart monitor thing, right? They had these wires on their chest, and then a LED that literally took their heart rate.
That's amazing.
And the every person...
Does this involve electrical shocks?
No, you would, as ordinary Rio de Janeiro Joe Schmo, could win money if you could raise the heartbeat.
Oh my gosh,
of
wow.
And so what they did, literally, was strip. And, like, wiggle their ass in the face of these movie stars. And just, like, the music would come on, and people would just be, like, wriggling their butt and stripping and moving as sexually as they can. And you watch the star, like, sort of try not to get excited.
Wow. Wow.
Because if their heart rate goes over, I don't know, say, 95 or 100 or something.
They have an aneurysm and die, right?
Then the contestant wins money.
It sounds like a great idea for a show, DJ 11.
It does. You
I
know,
think we could bring in some, you know, some 20-something hotties.
And hook them up to cardiograms or whatever this
is. Yeah.
Hook up to my heart rate. I mean,
no, right. Yeah, hook up your heart rate. Broadcast
it
over the
air. It seems like you win either way. You know, you're
yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very fun game, and it was definitely entertaining to watch.
Brazilians are really always innovating. That's what I love about Brazil. I mean, it sounds sort of like Make Me Laugh, but...
Much better.
Oh, much better.
Make Me... You know, spooge.
Right.
Can I say spooge in the air? I don't know. The producer
just did. Good. The producer gives the thumbs up to spooge. metaphorically speaking, sorry.
Another great site that I had, or another great experience I had down there, which doesn't really have much to do except for it's sort of related because we live in Pittsburgh and Andy Warhol is the homeboy. Mm-hmm. While I was there, there was this guy, of course I can't remember his name, who's fabulously kind of wealthy and famous. And his sort of shtick is he has this whole gallery filled with very famous art. I mean, just from every era. You know, he owns Frida Kahlo's and Diego Rivera's and Picasso's and all the sort of name brand stuff. And he himself is such a work of art. He thinks he's the Argentinian Andy Warhol. He's probably 60 or so years old and is... face was tanned like leather, and clearly there was evidence of several sort of plastic surgeries.
Did he have the big, bushy white hair?
He had a platinum wig and these sunglasses with giant gold sidebar here, YSL, you know. Mm-hmm. White leather pants.
Well, that's always a sign of class.
And I don't remember, some tight shirt. And it was really quite a sight. I really had to keep myself from sort of staring.
Vomiting? Oh.
Yeah.
So I missed the first part of the story. You saw this person in person?
Or yeah. I was with another I was with another curator who was going to meet him. She spoke Spanish. We were in Buenos Aires. Buenos Aires, in case you didn't know, is the home of plastic surgery.
No, I did not know that.
Well, I mean, it's next to L.A. I would say it would be number two.
Well, I've heard the highest percentage of people in any the highest percentage of people have plastic surgery in any country is in Argentina.
Yeah, I don't know why. It's I think they have real identity issues, but that's another. Yeah.
Well, I remember reading recently, if I may interrupt, I think it was on Salon, but it was a year or two ago, basically like kind of outcry in Argentina over the Miss Argentina beauty contest. It's basically like dueling plastic surgeons because everyone is so clearly like cut and sculpted and boobed up and lifted and tucked and so forth.
Well, you notice it maybe on people over, say, 50 or 45, you really notice it because sometimes it's just so bad. When I was down there, we got to this phrase when we wanted to sort of alert each other to, you know, oncoming plastic surgery victim, we'd be like, Catwoman, Catwoman.
That is so subtle.
And
were you doing that because of
because their eyes are sort of like pulled
Joyce
back.
Joyce Baldenstein?
Their nose has been kind of lifted, so it's sort of like, you know, the nostrils are vertical rather than...
You fabulous radio listeners are missing out on DJ Zoetrope's...
And their mouth and their lips have been kind of pulled and widened, so that was almost this sort of cat mask.
Well, there's this famous woman, actually, and this relates to art and sexuality, Joyce Waldenstein. She's the wife of some billionaire banker magnate in New York City, I think actually ex-wife now, who's been having plastic surgery over the last 10 years or so to make herself resemble a jungle cat.
Oh,
and she started
right.
out. Look, she
There's
started
a
out,
website.
Yes. Actually, pictures of her are pretty scarce. But she started out actually looking very ordinary, like kind of late 70s trophy wife look, but now is really freakishly
feline.
Like her eyes are very, very narrow and have moved back significantly on her head. She's had implants put into her cheeks, so they're puffed up. I think she's had her teeth all redone, chin molded. It's quite weird.
That's so interesting. I mean, you'd be afraid to have her over because she like would spray your house.
Well, no, she's a female cat, right? And only male cats spray. So, I guess if she went into heat, that would be difficult.
Can I? When Lance was here, he never stepped on my jokes.
I'm sorry. I'm no Lance.
No, it's okay. I like learning things about biology.
In 3 months, parole willing, Lance will be back.
But let me just tack on to this. There is a French artist by the name of Orlan, whose lifetime goal is to sculpt her face through multiple plastic surgeries into a composite of art historical beauty. So she took all these images, sort of scanned and made a sort of the perfect ideal woman through art history. So
so it's not like the left eye is Botticelli and the mouth is...
Kind of. I mean, I think it's a combination of Botticelli's Venus, Mona Lisa.
Not the cubists, though.
Wow. That's skipping
too bad. That would be much more interesting.
And so, you know, she kind of goes through these, I don't know how many operations. The operations have been sort of given as... you know, project funds or whatever for this pursuit of making...
So she's actually funded by...
Well, I mean, I think the plastic surgeons have given her gratis, you know, free of charge because it is an art project after all.
Well, I would actually like to take this moment to invite Pittsburgh area plastic surgeons if you want to do a makeover on myself, DJ 11. I think I could use a little lipo, perhaps, you know, strengthen my
skin. Maybe some collagen injections?
Yeah, well...
Bee stung lips?
My lips are pretty sensual already, don't you think?
Yeah, I guess you're...
The bottom one's
about
okay.
About a 9 on the pouty scale.
The bottom one is okay.
Yeah, but you might want to puff the top one.
Okay.
So, you get pec implants?
Pec implants, glute implants, that's the buttock.
Mm-hmm.
And we will in exchange for all this work, we will gladly plug your services in the show. I mean, we can't. Is that allowed?
I think that's pale. What the heck?
we're allowed to take services from member organizations. We can't take money, I don't think, but we can
Coke.
We can do some. There's some kind of, like, you know, we can sort of remind listeners that that's what it is. People can support our show. And so
sponsor.
I can say
it works for NPR, right?
The show's supported by the services of Dr.
Supermarket Button to the World.
Yeah. And you know, there's nothing that increases the power of your business like a plug from Sex Talk.
Absolutely. We've cornered the food freak demographic in Pittsburgh.
DJ Zoetrope.
So
speaking.
So just to go back a level, so there you were. I could confuse whether this was Rio or Buenos Aires.
Are you talking about the Andy Warhol wannabe?
Well, as soon as you started describing him, all I was thinking in my mind was, that's Philip Pelosi. Have you ever seen Philip Pelosi?
No.
Same sort of, like, freakish vibe. I heard some story about how he put his house. You know, they have these open house things, like in the Mexican War streets or whatever. People mm-hmm. will just open up their houses and you can just tour the various. Have you ever heard of that? What is that called?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, I guess Philip Pelosi participated in this one time, and he was the same kind of thing, like scary leather pants, like checkerboard hair.
Yeah, and I forgot to mention he has rooms of art. One of the rooms is dedicated to his art, which was the worst stuff you can imagine.
You're talking about what's his name?
The Andy Warhol lookalike in Buenos Aires.
Okay.
I wish I could remember his name, because his collection is actually quite fabulous, and he's just quite a character.
Did he, like, start out rich, or where did he get all this art? Or
I don't know.
Is he an artist, and did he trade with other artists?
Well, I don't think so. I think there's some big money connection that he has. But
maybe he won on that game show.
Yes.
That was in Brazil.
The leather pants.
Wow. Yeah.
Revealed I don't know. Some
shocking piece of anatomy and got himself a few million pesos
maybe.
Or rubles or...
Yeah.
Whatever's used in Argentina.
For me, it was always a giveaway to know that people have plastic surgery when they wear their hair kind of hanging down over their ears.
Mm.
To hide the cuts or the scars on the side of the ears.
Wow.
Because they sort of tuck the scar, like, behind the... Or, like...
All around here, your ear.
Really?
Okay.
So a lot of the Catwoman had bleached blonde hair that sort of just fell on the side of their face in this kind of very distinct way. That you knew. Aha! Plastic surgery.
So as both an artist and a woman, and since we so rarely have women on the show, like, what's your kind of feminist perspective on this? I mean, like, if the social climbers are all getting plastic surgery in order to land, like, rich men, like, doesn't this increase pressure on, like, other women who just want to be normal and age gracefully? And it doesn't kind of...
Well, I think aging in general is much more difficult for a woman, right? I mean, on a lot of levels,
right.
You know, it means you're no longer going to be reproducing, be capable of reproducing. It means you're no longer quote unquote sexy, and all that kind of stuff. Whereas for men, I think getting older seems to be like wine, you know, you only get better, you're still virile, or... You still can be with Viagra.
Yes. Thank you, Bob Lowell.
I think it has, you know, I think a lot of people, women, like to feel that they're still capable of getting a look. Mm-hmm. And the instant, you know, that's what some Latin American woman told me when I was sort of bitching about how much Italian or Latin American men whistle at you and blah, blah, blah. And they said, you want that more than you want them not whistling at you.
That's true.
So, but I still sort of want to press this point a little bit. I mean, do you think this is sort of a natural social trend that should be permitted to continue? Like, if you were, like, you know, a leader of the universe, would you, like, put an end to all this plastic surgery? Or do you think it's, like, you know, an appropriate way for women to compete, you know, on the scale of beauty? Because, you know, it just keeps on – it's this kind of brinksmanship game, right? Like, if Catwoman is getting, like, the latest kind of, you know – fabulous eye repositioning surgery and is, you know, then 10% more sexually attractive, you know, don't you...
Ah, the miracle of Botox.
Don't you and all the other people who are competing want to do the same thing? And...
Well, do
men, so another sort of related question is, like, you know, a lot of the sort of fine wine thing with men is probably just sort of like social position and wealth, right? I mean, women don't go for old, like, poor men, I mean, right? I mean, do they? No one's going for, you know, the kind of drunk guy that hangs out in front of the Giant Eagle, right? I mean, it's so, you know, well, it's a bad example, I guess.
Here's something interesting, too, that I haven't really seen examined much, other than in a piece written by Lisa Suckdog Carver, a zine queen and writer. But she was talking about kind of the class differences in plastic surgery. So she had a boob job many years ago, and almost instantly afterwards, within the year, felt really stupid about it, felt that it kind of labeled her as a low-class whore.
Let me interrupt you for a second and just say... Lisa Suckdog Carver.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry. She had a boob job a year ago.
Not a year ago, but I think like 6 or so years ago. But within the year, regretted it. Mm-hmm. Like, felt it turned her, like, kind of shouted out to the world that she was trailer trash trying to make herself pretty.
Wow.
And that's...
That she was poor?
No. Well, I mean, she wasn't poor, but she grew up very poor in this kind of standard white trash upbringing. I mean, like, vaguely alcoholic dad, mom, you know... We'd come and go, brothers in prison, blah, blah, blah. And she's saying, like, you know, real high-class women, like women of taste, women of distinction, don't get plastic surgery. You know, and it was only her kind of trying to pretend to the upper classes that made her get plastic surgery. Kind of like how it's kind of the upper middle class who are really concerned with, say, boats and a lot of the trappings of so-called upper class society, where the actual rich people are less concerned with these things because they have the money. Do you know what I mean?
I do. Although there's something, I mean, there might be a distinction that you can address here between sort of tasteful plastic surgery and exaggerated plastic surgery. I mean, you know, like I'm sure sort of, I don't know, Barbara Streisand or Doris Day style. I don't know if Doris Day's had plastic surgery, but.
What the heck?
Cher?
Let's start the rumor now.
Cher.
Although Cher, in some sense, is kind of white trash.
But I mean, so the plastic surgery that you sort of just kind of. Eases the wrinkles and sort of, you know, just kind of erases some of the age without necessarily...
Michael Jackson-style freakishness.
Being a big exaggeration. Some people in my family have had plastic surgery of the sort of former kind. They're big fans of it. I won't mention which family members, but they're big fans of it, and it's just sort of like, you know... The argument is like, you know, whatever tools technology gives us to reverse aging, you know, we are morally obligated to.
So as a doctor of sexological studies, I find actually the idea of plastic surgery more in the concept than in the practice to be fascinating. You know, this idea that – so people often say, oh, it's unfair to judge someone by the way they look because they have no control over that. And that's – I mean, that's a fine attitude to have, right? That's, you know, nice not to judge people over things over which they have no control. But now in some sense – we do have control over this, like, in the abstract, right? Like, okay, with unlimited pockets and unlimited collagen, you could basically make yourself look as good as you wanted, which starts to raise some more interesting issues. Like, in the future, as plastic surgery will inevitably get cheaper and more widespread, it calls into question, like, how people are going to – or it changes how people relate to beauty.
Well, especially, I would think, as the kind of changes you make get more and more radical. I mean, if you really could look totally – if I could make myself look like – you know, you, for example.
But with leopard spots.
Instead of the zebra stripes that he currently has.
Right, yes. Which,
I would keep my own penis rather than your own, tragically.
Well, you know, yeah, I know. More power to you there. I bet you can't pick a lock without using your hands, like I can.
I can't, but I can club a baby seal into unconsciousness. So,
but it's also interesting to note, this has to do a little bit with some of my own sexological research in computer graphics, that this was done 5-10 years ago. I think it was even done by an artist, and maybe DJ Zoe Troop can help me with the name here. What this artist did, I think it was a guy, I think he's British, he took photos of a lot of different people and using a computer averaged these photos together. And it turns out that if you the average person is much more attractive than any one person that makes up the average.
This wasn't this local CMU thing you're talking about, are you?
This no. This was
a German exhibition, or is this something previous?
No, this is quite a while ago, at least a decade ago. And so the idea, kind of the evolutionary biology backstory to this would then be, well, in some sense, what you're looking for in an attractive person is somebody who's biologically fit, and the average is often the most fit, right? But the interesting thing to note is, like, very, very beautiful people, like supermodels, are actually outliers on, like, a lot of physical dimensions, whereas just average hotties are, in fact, very, very average-looking faces. You know, all the crucial measurements like size of eyes, separation of the eyes, size of the nose, shape of the nose, location of the mouth is actually very, very average. But
so I'm trying to correlate this to my own experience. Are you saying that people that I was actually thinking about my childhood during everything that you said, and so I didn't actually hear any of it.
Was it a flashback? I'm sorry.
Oh, it's tragic.
Did I remind you of your funny uncle?
We are sitting on couches, after all.
Yes. Would you like a tissue?
He wasn't funny, ha-ha. He was... funny strain.
That's where you get it from.
So I mean, like, when I think of the people that I find attractive, I think they're all unusual. They're all, like, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio and C. Thomas Howell and so on. I mean, are you saying that people find these sort of average people attractive looking?
So if you kind of quantify all these measurements of a person's face,
yeah,
and then average these numbers out over a large number of faces. Actually, what I think they did is they just kind of did some kind of primitive morphing and scaling, yeah, between all these faces. Averaged faces are very attractive, whereas in some sense – so I'm talking mean rather than median.
Right.
So the mean face is attractive, but the average schmo you grab off the street will not be that attractive, right? So there's a difference.
So they actually used a computer to generate – did they use a computer to generate,
yeah,
sort of an average face, or did they find
– Yes.
Did they find – so – but, like, all the supermodels and celebrities we know don't have these criteria.
Well, as I was saying, yeah, so the actual, like, super beautiful people like Naomi Campbell or Brandy actually is a good example, who was once heralded as the beginning of the anime invasion.
Brandy Chastain?
No, the R&B singer, Brandy,
oh,
who has, like, enormous eyes that are very wide set apart. She gives her this very otherworldly beauty. Like, she's a vast
it's
outlier.
It's a Japanese cartoon.
Yeah. Like, kind of an anime Catwoman fallen to Earth. So, the super hotties are outliers, whereas your average 9.5 that you'd be dying to make eyes with at a party has a very averaged out set of features. I wish I had more specifics on this.
We get it, basically.
Yeah, I only I didn't do my thesis in this.
So. It was just preliminary work.
Yeah. If I had known, I would have brought my copies of the Journal of Sexological Research.
So I'm trying to make some sort of subtle segue into the actual stated topic of tonight's show, which was art. But
art and sexuality?
Yeah.
Representations of art and sexuality in the 20th century?
In the 20th century?
Or,
yeah, sure.
So let's just pretend that I had made that subtle segue and let's just proceed. So, Dr. Sexologist. Why can't I remember your name?
I'm Zoetrope.
I think Zoe.
Some kind of... Zoe.
DJ Zoetrope.
And I am Dr. Sexopolis.
Don't you forget it.
I must think of both of you as less than human because I can't remember your names. Do you think that I just don't really respect either of you? I do feel I miss Lance.
He might be close to more to animal with that special feature that he has. Maybe that's what you're responding to.
Yeah, we all miss Lance.
The pig-like corkscrew penis.
But the Pennsylvania Department
How
of
does that work?
Corrections.
Does the pig spin?
The thing is, you probably know the answer to this. I can tell.
I actually do know the answer to this.
That's really disturbing.
So, yes, pigs, in fact, do have corkscrew-shaped penises.
But how does that work?
How does it work? So it's not...
Physically.
Okay.
How does the male pig...
It has a twist.
And so the female has the negative space of a corkscrew?
And pity the right-handed petunia in a world of left-handed porkies. left-handed porkies, I guess. But yes, and in fact, the penis moves on its own in a pig, in addition to the in-and-out motion, also in a spiral motion. The reasoning behind this being that if you kind of have these, screw and thread, as it were, joining of a penis and vagina, you're going to have better, locking at the moment of truth, and therefore the pig sperm will splash around and make little pigs and so forth.
Hmm.
This is all kind of vague, but I got it from Cecil Adams, so you can find out more information.
News of the weird.
So somehow, and I can't imagine quite how, the penis is able to rotate around its sort of central axis without the whole pig having to rotate, which would seem...
The penis moves itself.
I can't imagine, like...
I think that should be something that robotics studies.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's hard to build something that rotates around its axis. Like, isn't it, like, it has to be attached to the rest of the pig somehow, right? I mean, it's not like it's floating.
We can do it. You know, you can rotate your hand.
Well, a little bit.
Yeah, I'm not saying that this thing spins like a propeller. You can drill through hard wood, but...
Can you open a fine Chianti with it?
Not without a lot of discomfort to the pig, but I imagine you could.
So where were we?
We were segueing into 20th century.
We're talking about...
Smoothly segueing into depictions of sexuality and art. So when you think sex and art, what do you think of, DJ Zoe?
I guess, you know, I had thought initially about representations of sexuality and how women artists were among some of the first to really break boundaries and put things in people's faces that was quote-unquote shocking for the time, which wouldn't be shocking now. And one of those pieces I could think of was The Dinner Party by Judy Chicago, which had this – it was a giant triangular dinner table with each place setting representing a famous woman from history. And this was sort of 1979 or something. So this was like early feminist history. And each plate setting was a woman from history, everything from, you know – Queens from Egypt to
Madonna.
Emily Dickinson, writers, artists, cultural people, politicians,
New York cat lady.
Emma Goldman, et cetera. But, and tiles on the floor had more names of more women. This whole political agenda of the piece. But the thing that got it in, the thing that got it into so much trouble was that each plate was a distinct kind of flowered vaginal form.
Wow.
Each one was different.
Georgia O'Keeffe would be proud.
Flowered vaginal form. I mean, so...
Like, kind of 3D coming out of the plate.
But it was clearly a vagina.
So it was a labial, flower-like, painted, bright-colored thing coming out of the plate.
Okay. So it was pretty... I mean, it was clear that it was vaginas, but it was a little bit... Had a little bit of flower vibe going.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty clear. Everybody knew what... So it had, you know, raised a lot of... It was controversial because
Where's
of
nowadays
that.
That would be.
So where was this? Where did this
view? Was that?
Where did? Well, like what? Where was this? Where? What museum was?
Well, I saw it in San Francisco, I think, when I was in high school, or junior high or something. But I know the last I read about it, she didn't have a permanent home for it because it's still too controversial. You know, until like we just had this whole run of the vagina monologues, right? Mm-hmm. And the fact that we use this. The word vagina in like regular speech now, or even the word lesbian or penis or whatever. I mean, that's sort of like we're used to it.
Assless chaps.
But I mean, in the mid 1970s, when feminism was kind of just making you get to the point to even represent one, that was a big deal. I mean, it's not funny, but.
So where is this now? Is it still on display somewhere?
Well, I heard that it was like all the parts. I mean, because it's a huge piece. Each side of the triangle table is probably 30 feet long. I mean, it takes a giant room to show this thing.
And you can get up right up close to the piece.
The whole thing is kind of on an elevated triangular platform or like stage kind of thing, maybe 3 feet off the ground. So you can walk right up to it.
I mean, I hate to ask this question, but I always whenever I see something like – I won't say something like this, but whenever I see a piece of art that I don't understand, I like want to know, is it easy to explain what the point of a piece like this is, or is it just like, you know, I'm going to put vaginas on plates because, I mean, I don't mean to trivialize this, but like, does the artist have a sort of specific message in mind, or is it really just like, you know,
I think
women
she did.
Are underrepresented in history, and I'm going to like you know, I'm going to just put this in your face and sort of shock you and make you notice. I mean, I don't really, like, you're probably better at putting this in words than I would be, but is there a way of putting this in words?
Well, I mean, I don't think this isn't a case of sort of, oh, whoops, how do those vaginas get on those plates? You know, like intuitive artistic process. You know, I think she was very, I mean, she had a real agenda and she had like 20 student interns going through. There was no feminist history. There was no books that sort of, here's the famous woman from history yet, you know. Uh-huh. So it was early, you know, no web to like look things up. It was early research like, oh, look at all these women that we never learned in our sort of male heterosexual linear history of the world, whatever. And so I think the early intent was to just get women known that were erased from history. And then the reason for the vaginal forms on the plates, I don't know if I can totally explain that. I think it was
to confront you with.
Are we eating the vaginas? Are they like are they what's for dinner? I mean, I sort of get the sort of women in history thing, and I also get the sort of
that's their place setting. It's like where they're sitting or
put their vagina.
Well, I'm sure there's you could spin lots of narratives for this, right? Like talking about by having the vaginas there, like it's kind of just pushing their sexuality in your face, right? Like letting you know that these are in fact women, you know, and what in some sense being a woman is defined by in our society. And also one could say that, you know, when you're looking at this piece, when you're looking at these women, when you're reading about these women in history, in some sense you are consuming like them, or you're, you know, taking their influence into your own body in some metaphysical way. I don't know. I'm winging on it here, right? But I think that's what when you're talking about contemporary art, I think that's basically what it is at some level. You're just talking about the associations, the things it makes you think about.
And also the fact that each one was different, that there's this uniqueness to
each vagina was different.
Yes. And I've seen this in photography too, that Beth B. is a pretty well-known artist in New York, and she did a whole series of black and white photographs. I forget what she called the series, something like jewels or, you know, some kind of floral jewel term. And it was all these black and white images of women's vaginas and the labia, and it was just that only.
Wow. But so
woman one, woman two, blah, blah, blah.
Presented in a...
like in a formal photography context, just framed.
So there's a piece at the Pittsburgh Zone Mattress Factory right now from the Artists of Asia show, which is going to be closing, I guess, in a few months. It's in the basement, which this reminded me of a little bit. So you walk into the room, and around the perimeter of the room are these gigantic photos, maybe 4 feet by tall by 3 feet wide, of the back of a male head. It's shaved head, and there's a big vagina kind of superimposed or digitally edited into the back of the head. And it's a different one on each photograph, even though the guy's head is the exact same and the exact same photograph in each one of these, but a different vagina on all the heads. And at the end of the room, far away from you when you walk in, is this bed that he's made, actually like kind of out of melted plastic rather than sheets. And there's this wiggling dildo on – we could say dildo on the air, right? set on top of this bed, just like wiggling and gyrating there at the end of the room.
Wow.
What does it mean?
It's okay. Again, that sounds like really visually stimulating and cool, although...
Yeah, well, so there's actually kind of a funny story behind this. This doesn't answer your question, what does it mean, but maybe it sheds some illumination on it. So this artist, unfortunately I can't remember his name, but he's a self-taught artist from China, where actually, interestingly... contraceptives and marital devices and so forth are readily and easily available, more so than in the U.S., in fact.
Yeah.
But pornography is, like, strictly verboten. Like, visual depictions of nudity is not just totally frowned upon officially. So there's this kind of this very different cultural set of assumptions. And I think that's being partly reflected in this, too. For him, like, having these photos of vaginas is very transgressive. Well, for us, it's the wiggling dildo at the end is transgressive. Although also, so here's a little bit of the story. So this guy is a self-taught artist who generally works with meat. Like, he will create small figurines or sculptures or whatever out of dried meat, or roll dried meat into little balls and use the balls to make stuff. And his original idea for this piece of the Mattress Factory was to make a gigantic mattress, appropriately enough, in the basement, stuffed with 6,000 pounds of cow intestine. However, the curator, you know, when he heard about this, obviously was a little bit nonplussed. So trying to convince the guy, you know, it's going to be there for a year in Pittsburgh in this summer. I don't think we really want 6,000 pounds of rotting cow intestine in the basement. Could you do something else for us? And perhaps in retaliation, this artist decided to do the most outrageous, most, quote, offensive thing he could do. So he put vagina heads all over the wall and a wiggling willy.
Well, I was thinking when you were saying wiggling willy, I was thinking about
Bill Clinton.
And his chupadita. You know, I took Spanish this past semester.
She's tossing off all these dirty words.
Elementary
in Spanish.
And we did spend one whole class learning all the good Spanish slang for various. It's different in each country. Hmm. For, you know, penis, suck my dick, your mother is a bitch, or whatever. Oh, am I not supposed to say that?
Too late now.
Anyway, no, the story that you were bringing up was. There's an artist named Vito Acconci in New York, and in 1972 or so, he did a very famous piece, which, of course, I'm forgetting the title. Seedbed, yes, that's the title. And basically, he, in Sonnabend Gallery, very well-known gallery, basically, you walked into the gallery, and there was nothing in there except a speaker. And he was under the floor of the gallery masturbating during gallery hours.
And the whole time?
Apparently.
Poor boy must have rubbed himself raw.
This is the way the show was. So for the whole month exhibition, the artist was underneath the floor of the gallery. And as you walked over him, he would speak and then sort of whisper. And so you would hear it. Broadcast into the gallery, he would talk about fantasizing about people that he couldn't see that were walking above him. Then he did this other piece. I can see Corey's really loving that one. He did this other piece, which I actually like because it speaks a little more about.
Yeah, who is this mysterious Corey of which you speak?
That guy that just walked out the room.
Right. That Brazilian guy? Can we get his international phone number?
There was this other piece that was sort of connected to a bicycle. So when the viewer sat on the bicycle and you pedaled really hard, you would raise this kind of multi-piece picture up into the sky and basically became an erect penis. If you pedaled really, really hard, all of the pieces would get up into the spires of the museum. But it would be really difficult to keep at that speed.
Wow.
So it would eventually come crashing down.
I hear you, baby.
That's amazing.
So it was a very, you know, it was interactive. It was sexual. It was art. It was good.
I feel like I have to ask a question. Okay, and this is going to be very offensive to, like, you know, almost all of my listeners and to you. But, like, I have to ask it anyway. What are the sort of measures of success or the criteria for quality for art pieces like this? Because, like, given, like, a bunch of free time and $100,000, I could make some really weird jackass masturbation piece that would, like, blow your socks off. But, you know, I would be laughed at by the entire art community. They'd be like, oh, that's so derivative and pathetic. I mean, like, this thing sounds really weird. Like, why is it good and why is, like, my jackass art piece, which I haven't really defined yet, but you can imagine.
I think a lot of in the art world, because it's such a delicate cookie, it's a lot of success in the art world has everything to do with context. That is, what you do touches on what people are thinking about, feeling, needing to see is different than whatever has been going on for the last year or something. And suddenly you become the, you know, penis art sensation of the season. You know, I mean, why some things are more sort of seen as successful.
That actually so if you touch the current art nerve and are innovative and yet.
Well, you could say that about, think about like TV shows.
Or music, you know.
Or bands.
As an outsider looking into the art world, like with a great deal of interest, it seems like there's some art pieces which have this very, to use a sexological term, like this very short time constant. Like they seem to be really, really hot for the season and then the art
disappear. Eats you up and spits you out.
But then there are artists, right, like kind of the Beatles of the art world, right, who tend to stick around, whose art, you know, ages like wine, you know, tends to gather more meaning and becomes more and more important as time goes on. So I think there's, like, the hot gallery scene art world, and then perhaps, like, there's a deeper art world underneath on that, which, of course, the short-term art world feeds into. But so you could, you know, you could create super hot penis piece of 2001, but then be forgotten about because you didn't move on, or because you, you know, didn't.
Or maybe be
right
you know, discovered after you die, which is usually how it works.
Well, but you don't get any groupies then.
Finding a wealthy Brazilian patron.
Did I meet any? You know, if you want to talk about Brazil again, I saw the most amazing transgendered prostitutes I have ever seen.
Really?
Yeah, Mauro drove me around to both the scummy area and the high-class Copacabana area of Rio. Oh, we're getting cut off.
Either that or she's giving us the finger.
60 seconds, babe.
Anyway.
Cut to the same finger, Chase.
Really beautiful bodies, hairdos, clothes, heels. I mean, just, yeah, willies and boobs.
Wow.
In one. They'd lift their short skirts and their shirts to give you the double deal.
Wow.
And it, wow.
To, you know, let you know what you were going to be getting. You have to go to Rio, obviously.
Thank you. I have to get out of Pittsburgh and go to Rio, or I have to bring a little bit of Rio to Pittsburgh.
The other thing is the big day to be there is New Year's Eve.
Oh, really? Fabulous.
About the beach, you know, goes on forever, and everybody goes to the beach, and you throw some thing into the beach, and you wear white. It's a big thing. And millions and millions and millions, the whole gay Latin America goes to Rio.
You know, we're out of time.
I can see the steam coming out of CJ 11's ears.
But I know where I'm going to be on the start of the real new millennium, January 1st, 2001. I'm going to be in Rio, and hopefully you'll all be listening. Thank you all for joining us tonight. Thank you, CJ Sextopoulos.
So I am Dr. Sextopoulos.
Thank you all for listening. Please tune in next week at the same time. This is WRCT Pittsburgh.